the criteria. You notice the changes. You notice the catalepsy. You notice the facial, the muscular changes, changes in breathing. Sometimes you'll get some twitches, some mild stereotype things as people are accessing a memory state. You get the slowed return as people come back. Why? People don't want to come back. It feels so good. You want to stay. All right, and then you get the bleed into consciousness where people are feeling better. The other thing that happens as time goes on, what you'll find is that, and the states deepen, you'll find that there is a pronounced latency to external stimulation. So that we were in a conference room where that was actually part of the bankruptcy court. And right next door was their hallway, and people would be leaving for work, and the door would slam, bam, and nobody would twitch. Okay, if there was a twitch, there'd be a 2 or 3 second delay before there was some acknowledgement, which is one of the signs of deep trance, or there would be no response whatsoever, and you'd ask them afterwards and say, well, did you hear the door slam? I said, yeah, but it was so far off in the distance, it just didn't matter. It wasn't important. You know, and again, these are the indicia of deep trance. But again, we're keeping away from that kind of language. On this level, we can talk about it that way. But because of the suspicions about hypnosis, and because we're teaching people how to do stuff, that's all we're doing, we're just teaching you how to do stuff. Okay, we don't need to go there in terms of that language. And because there is sufficient ambiguity in the definition of hypnosis, what is and what isn't, we can freely and honestly say, well, I'm not hypnotizing you. Okay, because there's a certain level to which hypnosis is about the set. Okay, and our set is definitely non-hypnotic, even though many of the tools are parallel. And if you look at meditation practice, you'll find that it has an awful lot in common with any kind of trance technique as well. So any question? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, in the last experience, one of the things that troubled me and surprised me was, so you were having us kind of focus in more on the feeling. So I was doing that. And all of a sudden I realized I could hear my heart beating, which was very strange because that's never happened for me mm-hmm. before, unless I've been like running like I was just now. But you know, I could hear it beating, and it was really cool. And I realized it was kind of speeding up or slowing down. And then all of a sudden I couldn't hear it anymore. And I don't know if I just came out of the trance lately or what happened, but that worried me, like I couldn't hear it anymore. And is that normal? What is that? I don't know what that
hearing
was.
Or not hearing or having
it
come and
it
go.
It was hearing. I don't know how to explain
maybe,
that.
Maybe it was simply a somatic awareness that may have been healer hearing and feeling and just being aware of heart beatingness.
Well, it was so peaceful.
You know?
And then when it went away, I had this yeah.
I think that you'll find that often in trances, people have spontaneous kinds of lightning experiences.
Okay.
One of the keys, and this is in the deepening sheet that I think you'll get tomorrow, one of the keys to dealing with this kind of thing, you go with it, all right? Just want to tell people, just allow yourself to notice what happens. And if your attention moves in a different direction, you can gently allow it to move back into the very best part. If you find yourself rising more than you'd like, begin to notice where it feels best and allow your attention to move there gently, always gently. All right, I emphasize the words gently. Gently allow your attention to move back into the very best part. So if you're enjoying the experience of your heart beating and it goes away, well, that's okay. Just lift your attention from that and allow it to gently settle into another part.
Okay.
Okay? And that's one of the deepening instructions that we'll work with.
Right.
But that's something for you to just keep in mind for now. What you'll find is that one of the things that you'll want to do, well, when we do this again in a minute, instruction is very simple, is that I'd like you to notice that you can control the depth of this experience. If you let go and rest down, and there I'll get hypnotic, growl it out a little bit with as much resonance as you can give, and a downward tone, you can go much deeper and enjoy it even more. But so that you know that you're in control, if you focus your attention, if you take hold of your attention, you can lift and go lighter. You can rise up just by focusing your attention on anything. And then you can let go and rest down in a way that lets you know that you are in control. And I think that's an important piece. That takes care of, in part, your objection, but it also makes sure that they know that they can make those choices. And for my money, that's a really crucial piece with this process. Now, I've been telling you what to do, but now you begin to understand that just what I do intentionally, all right, with my attention, can change the quality of it. So as I let go, it deepens. And I can allow my attention to just gently settle down into the very best part. And then we'll throw some things in, like you may discover that there are new dimensions and new perspectives and new possibilities of feeling as you rest even further down. Oh, very hypnotic. But by this point, if people have lost the picture and they're out there floating, it's not a problem, because they've gotten there. And now you're just giving them another level of instruction that they can choose to use or not. And so the whole thing is under the client's control. They understand that, and you give another piece back. And always in the background, as part of the discussion, is that part of the purpose of this is to give you back to yourself. All right, that's a nice ambiguous statement, but it really says that. How do I give you back to yourself? You spent all this time enslaved to drugs and illegal behavior. Well, now I want to give you back to yourself. I'm not going to say that other part. I'm not going to talk about the slavery part. Okay, why? Because we want to just let that be in the background. That's taken for granted. They're here because of drug programs. We don't have to say, because it's a drug program. We don't have to say that. We're here because their life's screwed up. Don't have to tell them that. And one of the mistakes that we typically make in treatment is we rub people's noses in the problems they have instead of the capacities that are available to them. And instead of teaching them how to make choices, we try to force choices on them when they don't really have a choice structure available, except insofar as drugs are not drugs, and that's an easy call, because drugs are easy and accessible. And so as we return choice to them, they will begin to make the choices. And again, in order to prevent this from being contaminated with the idea of being just about recovery, we never make that association, except very briefly in the beginning. And even then, it's only peripherally. When this is done as a standalone program, you can say, this will serve you as drug treatment, but we're not going to talk about drugs. We're going to talk about giving you more choices. We're going to talk about helping you. This will help as part of your rehabilitation program. It'll count as part of the counseling process, but we're not going to talk about problem states. We're not going to talk about problem behavior. We're going to talk about how to feel good, how to enhance your memory, how to get control and make a better future for yourself.
I think this even comes back to what you were saying earlier about people who want to stay sick. Because I think what you're talking about, in a way, is if I'm holding on to my drug addiction, this is a way I'm feeding myself and taking care of myself, or whether I'm holding on to being physically or mentally ill or whatever it is. So when we quit saying, I'm going to take this, I'm going to give you something else, and we stop doing that, and we say, here's an option, you can hang on to that forever. I remember Dick Mehugh saying to one of our classmates, you can stay as up as you want to stay. No one is going to change that. No one's going to, because she was a tough case. And I was like, Catholic priest saying that? You know, and
the F-bomb, he uses it.
So, but it was because it was her work, you
sure.
know. And so, anyway, that's what that reminds me of. Is
well,
that, I think that could apply to anything, where you're not
right.
saying, I'm going to take something
right.
that's critical to your coping mechanism
Absolutely.
Away from you.
Yeah, and that's the Milton model.
Yeah.
Milton Erickson's mm-hmm. approach was always you enter the client's model of the world and work from there. You utilize whatever they give you
right.
to get them really where they want to be and need to be. Now, as far as Richard Bandler is concerned, Milton was mostly interested that people work, get married, and give him presents. But, you know, that was health
yeah.
for him.
Except for that work part.
right.
else.
In reality, if we just move that over into a Maslowian perspective, is how do you begin to awaken to who you really are? How do you begin to...
Self-actualize.
Yeah, self-actualize. And so that's a, and one of the suggestions that I'll typically throw in is it rests down into the place where you can really understand who you really are. And that adds that Jungian piece. And it's just who you went as a feeling tone, as a sense, a felt sense of my individuality. It's you said that Gendlin was important for you, and you said, was it Dick or someone else?
Yeah, Dick did a course with him.
Yeah, and then there's that place again, that deep, centered place that says something about me as an individual, my separateness, without qualities. All right, it's a quality-less space, but it's a place from which all of our qualities can arise, and that's purely Jungian stuff on a deep level. It's also meditation. When Satori is essentially coming into that place of deep quietness, or samadhi, I guess, is abiding there, okay, where you're neither sensing nor not sensing, but simply being. And I'm not saying that we'll leave here as arhats or bodhisattvas, but it's you know, something in that direction. I think the direction we're supposed to be in. Okay, any more questions or comments about what we just did? Well, let's go back and let's do this one more time here, and then maybe what time we got? Is it?
It's
a quarter to 12.
Well, how long do you want to go before we break again? Do we have a schedule in the outer world? Do any of you have responsibilities in the real world that we have to be mindful of?
I will tomorrow or the next day. I have a patient who is in the hospital, but I'll let you know tomorrow.
Okay, all right. Well then, let's do this. Let's go through this one more time, and then you can just break into pairs and read through the script with one another just to see how it goes. Now, the first time that you go through it, you read through the script, okay, and start with visual, make it bigger and brighter. How does that work? What happens? Step all the way into it first, because associated versus dissociated is really the first and most important amount. Then you can go through any of them. The order isn't terribly important as long as you hit them all. If someone has a preference, you're obviously kinesthetic, and so that was good. You had a strong auditory component, I think, and so we could start with you with auditory and then bring in the rest. You can start with, if it's a one-on-one, you can start with whatever their preference is. You can just explore that. Or you can just go right through the list and just tell them, so it doesn't mean too much to you, but that's okay. Just find out which one of these changes it for you. Then after one read-through, you go to the second part of the script that just says, you know, make it bigger, brighter, closer, you know, all the way down, step all the way into it, and then begin to multiply it from there. So there's the initial one where you ask people to pay attention to what makes the change for them, all right? But as quickly as possible, after you've gotten them into the state, you want to get to the place where they're just out there floating, zoned into the ground. The world is going away, the memory is going away, and the rest of it. Is that clear? Let's look at the script just for a minute before we do this. And I think I said that was on page 32. So the initial script invited participants to choose an experience that made them feel wonderful, Now, remember the criteria. And the criteria is it has to be complete in itself, something that will never be changed, something that will always be a positive memory. If they can't get to something like that, something that tasted good, something that made them laugh, something that they enjoyed in the last day or so. A momentary experience doesn't have to be the best thing in the world. All right? And the first exercise, do not specify the state. We want them to try and get over. At all costs, what we want them to do is just do the exercise. So walk them through it. As they ask to notice the difference between associated and dissociated in the picture or out, vary the intensity just generally. Have the participants close their eyes and experience the memory. Let them know just how they get to the memory, what they notice first. During initial walkthroughs, here's a little script piece. People differ as to which sense arises first when they access a memory. Some people remember pictures. So this is some canned language. You don't have to use that, but you can say something very similar. All right. Now, if we go down here on page 33, start off with a pleasant memory, a memory that was fun or interesting or positively moving. Go for a memory that stands on its own as something pleasant. Again, this is canned language. You've got the idea already from having done it now, and you can do a modification. Now, vision has the following features. Association. Are you experiencing it from the perspective of an actor in the scene, or as an external observer? Can you see it through your own eyes? Does it seem like you're watching a movie, or are you in the action? Close your eyes, access the memory, and notice. If you're accessing it as if it were a movie, step all the way in. All right, I don't seem to have put that language in here, but do that. How's that change it? After each one of these, how does that change it? If it's black and white, make it color. How does that change it?
And do you want them to say answer
yeah.
out loud?
Yeah. If it doesn't make a change, make sure they know it doesn't matter. That's okay, because each one of these works differently for everyone. Let's go through this, and you tell me which ones work best for you. Now,
yes.
Start down halfway through the page.
Okay.
Make sure that you're experiencing the memory from within. Okay? Ask them first, are you experiencing it from inside or outside? Make sure you're experiencing it from within. If you seem to be watching from the outside, use your imagination and step all the way in. Notice what changes. Tell me what changes. Color. Notice whether the memory is color or black and white. Pause. How does that change when you change it? And just for each one, go through it and just, you can make a note, but most of all, have them make a note for themselves. Go through that step by step. Dimensions, if the experience has two dimensions, imagine three. Extend them into the plane, add a sense of time or eternity. What happens to the experience? Asking one guy about his experience of spiritual experience, I said, have two dimensions or three? More! And I said, well, just imagine, enjoy all those, you know, whatever it is. And so sometimes you can add multiple dimensions. Movement. If the representation is a still picture, make it a movie. What happens? What happens when you do that? Bring the picture much closer. How does that impact the change? All right, and go through all these. Then talk to them a little bit about it. Then add the auditory, yeah?
Why is it that you're asking them to speak? Doesn't that...
Well, again, there's a piece of fractionation here. Mm-hmm. This is just the first time through. And so we're just going to do this as a discussion. There are two things. Number one, there's a little fractionation. Second thing is that it puts it outside of any kind of hypnotic context. It makes them aware of internal process, but puts it conversationally, so it's not like you're taking control over everything. It's something that they are taking control over. You go through all of these. Volume, how loud is it? Make the sound louder. Turn up the volume. Adjust the volume. If there is no sound, turn on the sound. Skip over the introductory stuff. I realized that in the script, and I'll adjust that for you and send you a new copy. This was taken pretty much out of the written exercise. This is designed for them to take home and go through it. So there's an explanation and then the questions. Always use the second group of questions. So notice how loud the sound is. Is there sound? If there's no sound, turn it on. Turn up the volume. Adjust the volume for the maximum positive impact. Okay, don't just make it louder and louder, because for some people that'll overwhelm them. So make it loud enough so it really feels good. Notice where the sound comes from. For that one, they don't have to do anything, just notice where it comes from. If the sounds are monophonic, add stereo or holophonic sound. Let it wrap around you. What happens? How does that change things? Always, what happens? How does that change? Have them notice. Now, you could do two or three of these in a row and not ask the question until after two or three of them. Okay? See how the person responds. In some cases, you'll want to poll after every one. In other cases, you may want to poll after two or three. If it's a group, you know, you can vary that. But you have to calibrate for the person. Most of all, you want to go through the list and have them do the changes. And there will be a couple. In NLP, we talk about the difference that makes the difference. None of these, not all of these, work for everyone in the same way. But for everyone, there will be some idiosyncratic ones that powerfully impact them. Associated versus dissociated always has an impact. People always feel it more intensely after stepping into it. And so you go through this, and then it said, by now you should have noticed the memory that you began with has grown much stronger, more vivid, and more real. You can use that. You've also realized that when you stepped back into it to manipulate the sound dimension, it was already easier to get into. And then you go into the feeling. Now step back into the memory and do the feeling. Now, you can go through this several times, or just actually one time. Go through it one time and say, and ask them to begin to pay more and more attention on the feeling. By the time you get to the feeling, you're going to find that they are already starting to lose the picture, or the picture is getting very strong. One of two things happens when people get to the feeling. All right, either it immediately increases the intensity of the memory, and that's typically the first response, but then as they focus more and more on the feeling, the memory disappears. You may need to comfort them about that and say that if the memory begins to fade, that's okay. So let's go on just a little bit further. When you've gone through the whole list once, have them close their eyes, zoom all the way into the best part, use that word, feel the rush. Okay, we're dealing with drug people. Feel the rush. You want to make that association. You want them to feel a little bit evil. Okay? Why? One of the interesting things that happens out of Amsterdam's experience with pot is that the rate of pot use in Amsterdam is now less per capita than it is in San Francisco. Why? It's not illegal. Half the rush is taken away because you're not doing anything bad. So if you use the word rush, that has certain resonances.
Could you say your sentence one more time? The one that, well, I was looking at,
the number 10 is where he talks about rush.
Number 10? Mm-hmm. Feel the rush. Imagine you could reach out now, quickly enter the feeling state. As I notice the rush, draw the energy back to the start. Here, imagine you can reach out with imaginary hands and take hold of the very best part of the feeling as it spreads through your body. Take hold of it and bring it back to the place where it started. Push it back through the center so it doubles. And use that. Just take your time with that. All of this, do slowly, give them time to respond. Imagine you can reach out with imaginary hands. Take hold of the best part of the feeling as it moves. And just use that kind of language. Now, go down to 11. And as you turn your attention, just gently turn your attention to the center of the place where the feeling is centered. You begin to notice, really notice, its temperature, its color, whether it makes a sound or a hum. And you can really notice how it moves, whether it's centered in your body or beyond your body, whether it moves in a circle or a loop or a spiral, whether it turns clockwise. These are the impossible dimensions of feeling. Cross out the scripting in 10 and go directly to 11. Cross out the scripting in 10. Okay, so that's the indented paragraph in bold. cross that out and go directly to 11, because that gets repetitive. And so you're going to go from 10, rush, feel the rush, zoom back into it. And now as you turn your attention, just gently turn your attention, notice whether it turns clockwise or counterclockwise. Again, this is cognitive overload, but it's also using somatic markers, to use Ledoux's language, to access the feeling on a deep kinesthetic level and begin to move it through and to accelerate and multiply it. Is that reasonably clear? Mm-hmm. And what I'd like you to do is just, well, we'll go through it one more time, just the way I do. Maybe we'll just access the state. And as you begin with this script, go back to page 31 again, and 33, I'm sorry. And we're going to cross it, go to vision, and cross out the first part where, on the bulleted lists, where it says association. You're not going to read that part. Okay, and you're going to start with, you know, notice whether you're experiencing the memory from within. If you seem to be watching it from outside, use your imagination and step all the way into the experience. Notice how this changes. What happened? Tell me what happens when you do that. If they don't do that, ask them to go back to it. Color. Notice whether the memory is in color and black and white. If the memory is black and white, use your imagination to turn on the color. Let them sit with it for a minute. Ask them again. So with that edit, I think we're doing pretty well. The same thing for sound. Knock out the first set of bullets and really combine it with the other. Notice how loud the sound is. Make it louder. Turn up the volume. If there's no sound, turn on the sound. Sources. Notice where the sounds come from. They don't have to do anything except just notice that. Okay? Dimension. If the sounds are monophonic, do they know what monophonic means? All right? But if it's mono, they'll probably understand it. Or stereo. Make sure you say those two together. Is it mono or stereo? If it's mono, make it stereo. If it's stereo, what if it's sensorial? What if it's holophonic? What if it surrounds you completely? You can be a little freer with this. Okay, so these are just suggestions. Dimension, if the sounds, I already did that. Direction, notice the direction of the sound sources. The special attentions to the ones that move with the object you see. You want to make that explicit. That kicks up attention. That kicks up attention in several areas of the brain. When sensory sources converge, they become very much more important than they are separately. So that convergence is important. Notice whether the sounds are voices or music or just sound. Make that discrimination. Why? Because when people begin to make those broad discriminations, they begin to get even more details. Timbre, notice the richness. You can say timbre. Notice the richness and complexity. You don't even have to use the word if it feels pretentious or like they won't understand it. Rhythm, notice any rhythms in the sounds that resonate. And then there's some canned language. By now you will recognize, or you may recognize, that this has gotten deeper. Notice which one of these experiences has deepened this. What works best for you? Ad lib a little bit. Feel free with this. Remember, you could read this straight from the paper and get really good results. But even this first time through, feel free to work with it. Again, knock out on page 35, knock out that first set of bullets. All right, now step back into the same memory. Enter quickly and enjoy the speed with which the experience arises. Notice the rush of sensory information. Remember that when somebody's taking a drug, the intensity of the impact of the drug, both for its addictive potential and for its hedonic impact, is based on the speed with which it impacts the nervous system. So you want to keep emphasizing the word rush. Step into it as quickly as possible, so it has the same kind of impact as a drug state. Now, that's not going to resonate except on a verbal level, a semantic level, with the drugs themselves, but it's going to compete with them on a significant level. If they get a whack out of this, they can say, oh, why do I bother with that other stuff? First couple times, it may only last a few minutes, but the more they're able to do this, the more powerfully, the more quickly they're able to access the state, the more likely it is to compete against the drug state. We could have something coming up very gradually. We can get somebody to experience a whack as quickly as possible. Then we have something that really will compete. Then we go through depth. Let's try it just one time. For this walkthrough, just do it one time. Now, you want to be careful to make sure that at least from this point forward, you don't use the word memory and only use the word experience. Why? Because we want to separate the experience from the memory.
Now, wait a minute, I just missed what you said. You said that the first time?
Well, we're just use that list one time for each memory. So if you do it several times, you can walk them through that first list once and then go on with the other language.
I'm back on 33.
You're back on 33, okay.
Do we start off with a pleasant memory?
Yes,
yeah,
start off with
experience?
A pleasant. Start off with a pleasant memory.
And
okay.
Whole and complete, right?
Pardon me?
Whole and complete.
Whole and complete, right. Whole, complete in itself, something that will never change. Something that nobody could ever ruin. And that's an important thing. That's a crucial piece. Something that will always be good. There are a couple memories that I characterize that way. Actually, this came out of a timeline exercise. My future self told me that these were important memories. When I was standing, I was raised on a riverbank down in Red Bank, New Jersey. And one day I was about 6 or 7 years old, standing on the riverbank, and I looked across the sweep of the river, and I realized I could go all the way from my house to Marine Park, which was about a mile away, all by myself, never have to cross a street, I could get all the way back just by following the riverbank. I said, wow, that was just really neat. That's just my eyes lit up. Nobody could ever take that away from me. It was a revelation that happened back then, and it stays with me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, whoa, look at that. I could do something here, you know? Another one was in I like this one, even though there's a disappointing element to it. More, it was confusing. I'm like 4 years old. My parents had just joined the Episcopal Church down in the bank. And I was in Sunday school. And somehow I was wandering around by myself in the darkened Sunday school hall. It was an old building. And there was this beam of light coming down into the auditorium. And, full of dust. And you could just see it clearly. And everything else was dark. And I said, oh, there's where God is. And I said, wow. And I ran over and sat in the light and found myself looking out the window. And I couldn't figure out what happened. But it was just really, really kind of neat. And I figured that something good had to happen, you know, in spite of the fact that it was just outside. And I couldn't figure out how that garage got there when God was supposed to be there. But it was curious. And you know, but it's the kind of...
It sure looks funny.
Yeah, God is a garage, oh great garage. But it's intellectually there's a disappointment, but there was none there. Just curiosity, just how'd that happen, you know? And so curiosity is kind of important to me. Those kinds of things that nobody will ever be able to change. Yeah. So those are good things. So you're gonna go through this, drop the word memory. We get down to page 36. And we're gonna skip the language at 10, but remember to use the word rush. Step into it as quickly as possible. Feel the rush as you return to the deepest part of that. At 11, also let's just see. For 8, knock out the bullets in 8 on page 36. Suggest they return. Return to the same state. Rush all the way into it. Make it bigger and brighter and closer and stronger.
So keep the line at 10 that says, now
have them return to the state.
To it and quickly rush it to the
That's
state.
Right. That's right. Okay. And focus on more and more of the content. Content will be crowded out of working memory. And then move relatively quickly to 11. And as you turn your attention, just gently turn your attention. Do this slowly. to the center of the place where the feeling is centered, you can begin to notice, really notice, its temperature, its color, whether it makes a sound. Do it really slowly. There's a temporal ambiguity when you slow it down like that. It gives people time to respond, but also they don't know what's coming next. And they begin to do a transderivational search. They begin to look inside to find out what are all these things, what's possible next. And as you provide the language little bit by little bit, they end up going deeper and deeper into state.
Okay. Are you saying that the weather, the word weather, which implies that it's going to be, there's going to be an or, that is?
Yeah, whether it's centered in your body or beyond your body, whether it moves in a circle or a loop or a spiral, all right? And then the pause, they're thinking of another one, and then you shove in whether it turns clockwise or counterclockwise. I don't know. I don't know what happens inside of you. I don't know if it's clockwise. Was it a loop? Is it a circle? Is it complete? Is it incomplete? So I'm going to go through all these things. Just take the time.
It was interesting. When you did all that.
Yeah.
I was thinking, none of this is happening. And then all of a sudden it was separating. So part of it was here and part of it was there. I mean, it didn't stay together.
Yeah.
It moved away. It like, you know, like breaking up. The amoebas, you know, they... But it didn't do any of the things that you said, but I did notice what it was doing.
Uh-huh.
See, that's the part too. That's the first time I had actually entered into like hearing and my heart was it was those words. It actually turned you to the center of the place where the feeling is centered, and that's where it went to. And that's why and it was like one of the only things that like made sense with those words.
All right. Well, that's you know again is that there's sufficient ambiguity. That if they are paying attention to the feeling more than you, and you want to keep emphasizing the feeling and the experience and not you. And so, you know, from time to time you can say, and I might just fade away too. That's okay. And the feeling can go away, and the room can go away, and I can go away. And you can just rest down into the very best part. And then you just call them back. Give them some time. Give them 3 or 4 minutes. Watch their face. Has their face become symmetrical? Has their breathing changed? Have they become very still? Is there a relaxation of the facial muscles so that there's a sense of peace that comes out of them? Watch carefully and see where they're going. Excuse me. And when you bring them back, talk to them about it. Okay? And then you can use the second set of scripts, which are much better. I apologize. it's okay to step all the way back into it. Step all the way back into the place where you left off and rest down into the very best part. Okay. And if you just leave it like that for a second iteration and let them go on their own like I didn't let you do, okay, then you'll find that this will work pretty well. Maybe we should, let's go into state one more time while we wait. No, we won't wait. Right, do you feel comfortable with giving us a try? Any questions before we do it?
So just pair off and go.
Yeah, just pair off. Go through it. Do, all right, take maybe 15 minutes each.